An Osho Talk.
God is dead. Now Zen is the only living truth.
Number 6.
Sukhito wrote, "Cause and effect both necessarily derive from the great reality. The words high and low are used relatively. Within the light there is darkness, but do not be attached to this darkness. Within the darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Light and darkness are a pair, like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. Each thing has its own intrinsic value and is related to everything else in function and position. The relative fits the absolute as a box and its lid. The absolute works together with the relative like two arrows meeting in mid-air." Reading the above lines, you should have grasped the great reality. Do not judge by any standards. If you do not see the way, you do not see it, though you are actually walking on it. When you walk the way, it is not near, it is not far. If you are deluded, you are mountains and rivers away from it. I say respectfully to those who wish to be enlightened, do not waste your time in vain.
Friends, I hope you must have enjoyed the 10 God-oriented people on the gateless gate, shouting pathologically that Jesus is the only Savior. We used to have in the commune a motto in America: Moses earns, Jesus saves, Bhagwan spends. Just utter stupidity, saving, earning. I have never saved and never earned. I am simply spending. When others are earning and saving, why bother? But you will enjoy such processions more and more, because there are more idiots in the world than you can think of. Sooner or later they all have to come in processions. And I don't move out of my room, and the whole world is concerned about me. Ananda goes on bringing news from all over the world. Such immense concern about a single man who has nothing to be afraid of. This proves that even nuclear weapons are weaker before the words of a man who has arrived to the ultimate home. What they are afraid of, and they find excuses which make them just a laughing stock. The Dutch government is still keeping the law that I cannot enter in their country. And basically when they made the law minister had reasons, the same reasons all over the world, that even a 3 weeks visa for me and your whole religion, morality, everything is sabotaged. But Holland has a new idea also when they pass the law against me, that because I have spoken against homosexuality, that's why they cannot allow me in their country. I have told, and I am telling again to my sannyasins from Holland, that tell the government to change the name Holland and make it homosexual land. Because I have spoken against homosexuality. Homosexuality is a religion or what? People's feelings are hurt. This is so sick, so pathological. But you will have many such circuses coming here. Enjoy them. Laugh and dance. And they were all long faces, sad. And Anando was there, she told me, that the man who was the leader, who was shouting, simply needed a girlfriend. It is just repressed sexuality which becomes all kinds of perversions. Christianity is one of those perversions. The questions, the first question, it seems that for God worshippers, the opposite to God is not, in the first instance, that which is evil, but that which is nature. What has made men such easy prey for the priest with their concept of a God who is hostile to life? The questioner is very clear and very right. On the surface, the Christian theology seems to be saying that God is opposed to the evil. But if you look deeper, then you see that it is not actually opposed to evil, it is opposed to the nature. All religions are against nature. It is not only Christianity. Why they are against nature? There is a great psychological strategy. The strategy is that if you are programmed to be against nature, you will live a miserable life. You will live in anxiety, anguish, perversion, guilt, And this whole phenomenon can be created only if you are programmed to be against nature. If you are natural, then you will be just as happy as all the birds and all the trees and all the animals. They don't worship God. They don't go to any church. They don't have any theology. They don't have any feeling of guilt. They are simply natural. The priest found it out very early in the human history that man can be forced to be God-oriented only if he is forced to be against nature. Because once you are against nature, you are schizophrenic. Your whole being is part of nature. Just your mind is against nature, because only the mind can be programmed, not your body. So you may take the vow of celibacy, but that does not change your biology. That does not change your physiology. It is just a mind concept. Just words. Your blood will go on creating sexual energy. Your body will go on creating sexual hormones. Have you seen the statues of Buddha, Mahavira, and 23 other Tirthankaras of the Jainas? You will be surprised. They don't have any beard, any mustache. Do you think these people had no beard, no mustache? But it is the cunning priest who made these statues to make it clear to you that these people are not sexual, because mustaches and beards come out of certain hormones. Man has those hormones, the woman does not. To show that their physiology is also changed, their beards and their mustaches have been removed. Because no photograph exists, and the statues were made after they had died, 300 years after. So nobody had any idea, nobody has seen these people. But the desire, you can figure out. Krishna has no beard, no mustache. Rama has no beard, no mustache. What is happening to these people? Because you go on seeing your celibate monks and they are continuously growing beard and mustache. Their celibacy has failed. Beard and mustache so that your manhood is still the same, in spite of your promise in front of the statue of Jesus or any other god that you are going to follow celibacy. This remains only in your mind. But your whole body, your whole structure is in favor of nature. So you are split into two parts, and a house divided is going to fall any moment. These religions have created insanity and nothing else. That is their only contribution to humanity. Insanity, split consciousness, split personality, one part which is very important, the mind. It has no power over the body. It cannot change anything in the body. This mind is programmed according to a certain ideology. And when this mind finds that your body is acting against the program, it feels guilty. It feels miserable. It feels worried that there is going to be great punishment after death. You will be thrown into hellfire for eternity. Your body wants just natural. It wants food. It wants nourishment. It wants love. Love is also a nourishment. If nobody loves you, you will shrink and die. There are hundreds of experiments done by the scientists on monkeys. In one experiment which has been repeated and found to be completely certain, the small baby monkey is brought to the lab and two mother monkeys are provided. Both are artificial. One is just wires, but it has pipes from which the child monkey can drink milk. But he cannot hug to the wires, and he cannot feel while drinking from a pipe the feelings of a mother, the love, the warmth. The other monkey child is given just a little different version of an artificial mother. The wires are covered with woolen clothes, with fur, and the mother's blood. It is artificial, just made up, is warm. It is kept warm through electricity. So the child feels the body warm because of the warm clothing, and inside there are tubes carrying blood kept continuously warm by the electricity, and it has for the child monkey the breasts, not just like pipes, but almost looking like real breasts. Plastic, but warm, and the milk comes warm, and the child monkey can hug the mother, and strangely, all these experiments proved that the child who gets the warmth and a certain idea that he is with a living mother lives. The other child dies. Within 3 months, the other child dies. Although he is being nourished, taken care of, only one thing is missing: the warm breasts of the mother. Only one thing is missing, some feeling of love. Even deceptive, artificial warmth is helping the child to grow. But just today, I came to know that in America, the Red Indians have almost been killed. Few have remained who live in deep forests, in reservations, and they are given pension because America is using their lands. The whole country belongs to them. And they are very few, so it is not much of a problem. It is better to give them money than to create a revolution or any revolt from them. And money is very destructive because no work is given. Work makes you feel that you are doing something, you are worthy, you are contributing to life, to existence. You are taking care of people whom you love, but no work is given to them. That gives a feeling that they are not needed at all. If they die, the government will be happy, the nation will be happy, because that much pension will be saved. And what one is going to do with the money if he has no work? He will drink alcohol, he will gamble, he will go to the prostitutes, and in his drunkenness he will fight, and sometimes he will rape and murder. And when they commit crimes, then immediately American government forces them into jail. What I am leading you to, it is a strange fact that the red Indians who have been forced into jail, almost all of them declared committing suicide. Although I know the American jail, I have been in 5 jails, there is nothing that can help you to commit suicide. You cannot carry even your watch inside the cell. In the cell, it is absolutely empty. There is not a rod that you can hit your head. There is nothing. Absolute care has been taken that the person cannot do anything as far as suicide is concerned. But I understand why those people must have died. Either they have been killed, but most probably they simply shrank. They died out of shrinking. Life is useless. It was useless before, now it is even more useless. And they have been sentenced for 30 years, 40 years, or for their whole life. To live in this cell, where there is no love, although they are given food, where there is nobody accepts them as human beings, their dignity is taken. My feeling is that a person can die out of shrinking, because there is nothing that he can commit suicide with. It is possible that the police and the jail officers must be thinking he has committed suicide. He has not committed suicide. You have forced him into a space where he is not needed, neither loved, neither respected, no pride. He shrinks. There is no meaning, no significance. Why go on living into this slavery? Into this indignity, humiliation. The whole humanity has shrunken because of the religions continuously teaching you to be against nature. And you cannot be against nature. So all that you can do, you can become a dual personality. On the front gate of the house, you are a Christian, you are a Hindu, you are a Mohammedan, and you are sewing a mask to the people, a false face, and from the back door you are natural. So you start feeling a struggle amongst within your own heart. This struggle is the root that the priest can exploit. Because you are feeling so miserable, you are in need of somebody wise to advise you, to give you some way how to get out of this anxiety. So first, religions create anxiety, anguish, misery, suffering. And the way to create it is to create your mind to be against nature. That is the simplest method. Just be against nature and you will be very sad, empty, not needed. You will lose your whole desire to be alive. Then naturally, one wants some advice, and these priests have been bragging that they know what is the way to get out of misery. Prayer. God will take care of you if you believe in Him. This is a whole strategy of all the religions. First create misery, anguish, guilt, and then the persons are bound to come to you. To the priest. Because all priests for centuries have been keeping their holy scriptures, which are not much holy at all, their monopolies. For example, in India, only after British Empire came into existence, for the first time, Hindu scriptures were printed. Otherwise, and Hindus were very much against to print them, because once you print them, they become available to everybody. They were keeping handwritten scriptures. Particular families had the monopoly. From father to the son, it was coming like a heritage. It was their property. And the public was never allowed to know what is in their holy scriptures. So they were the wise men. Half of the humanity, women, were not allowed to read holy scriptures. In India, half of the humanity, the women, and 1/4 of the untouchables were not allowed to even enter a temple, or even to hear a Brahmin chanting mantras from the Veda. The punishment was death. What was this secrecy? The reason was that if everybody comes to know, then two things are going to happen. First, he will know that there is nothing holy in it. 98% is sheer nonsense. Perhaps 2% you can find out which has some beauty, some inspired sayings. So it will be a great exposure that you have been hiding these scriptures and there is nothing in them. And secondly, the monopoly is lost. People can look into the holy scriptures for their consolation. The priests were very much against to publish their books. Finally, they agreed because under British rule, they had to agree. They had no power. They agreed, but they agreed that the books should be published in Sanskrit, which is not a living language. Only the priests know it. Only the Brahmins know it. It has never been a living language of the common people. Buddha has to speak in Pali, not in Sanskrit. Mahavira has to speak in Prakrit, not in Sanskrit, because the public has no idea of Sanskrit. Not only the Vedas they had kept in secrecy, they have kept the language also as a manupali of the Brahmins, of the priests. And this has been the case all over the world in different proportions. So you are forced finally to go to the priest. When you are feeling so miserable and you don't see anywhere any light, and the night is so dark and goes on becoming darker, and there seems to be no hope for the dawn, where are you going to look for? The priest is there, who claims he knows God, who claims that he has the sole monopoly of God's message for humanity. Man became easily a prey because he listened to all these people and they managed to convince him. They were more educated. They were the only educated. They knew how to argue, how to convince. The whole masses had been kept in darkness. So they argued against nature. And they convinced people, and it is very convincing. For example, everybody is suffering out of marriage. And marriage is a creation of the priests. It is a good device to keep people miserable. You will not find in my people any misery, because there is nothing like a bondage. You should live as individuals in freedom. Out of your freedom, your love, but not against your freedom. If you sell your freedom for love, you are going to be in despair. So marriage was one of the devices to keep people harassing each other, fighting with each other, because they cannot separate. No divorce was allowed by any religion. And it is human nature to get fed up. You cannot eat the same food every day except me. My cooks, my people who take care of my body, they get fed up. And I am eating and they get fed up. Because they have to bring the same. But unless you are enlightened, you are going to be fed up with everything. It is good when it is new. You have to change your car every year. It does not mean that the new car is better than the old. Most probably it is not. The older was more stronger, has a thicker body, more stronger engine. The newer is becoming more and more a toy. And because you are going to change in 1 year, there is no need to make a very strong car. What you are going to do with a strong car? Strong cars were made to serve you for your whole life. The newest car will be more fragile, and in fact it is for the benefit of the manufacturers that you change your car every year. Otherwise, how he is going to produce new cars? The factories will close. So great propaganda for the new cars. And what changes is just the bonnet, a little design change, new colors, more shiny colors. But the reason why people change the car is one gets fed up. One gets fed up with relationship also. In the beginning everything seems to be just great. But how long it is going to be great? Soon you become acquainted with the geography of each other. Once you have seen a naked woman, it is the beginning of the end. Only in India, marriages go on being happy for the simple reason that husband and wife cannot see each other in the daylight. They cannot talk to each other before their elders, and families are joint families. So one family maybe 40 persons are living together and there are many elders. My mother has told me that not only the husband cannot see the wife in daylight, he cannot even play with his own child before the elders. And this is a program centuries old. And when you see your wife in the darkness of the night and you cannot even talk, because all around the joint family, your elders are sleeping. If you start talking, somebody may wake up. So silently under the blankets, without saying even I love you, just make love and reproduce and go out of the bed to your own bed, so nobody is disturbed. But you don't know your wife. You have never seen her. So the interest remains. It is the darkness that keeps the interest. But in the West, it is very difficult to remain interested in the same woman for your whole life. After the honeymoon, the marriage is finished. I think honeymoon is the only time you are happy. And then begins a long journey of misery and unhappiness. Now the same is happening in India, because now India is becoming civilized, entering into 21st century. So people get fed up, but they cannot say the truth that they are fed up with you. So anger comes, violence comes. They both become sad. I was just telling to Zareen the other day, where she is. She is sitting there. And that Manu, Mickey Mice, is sitting there. He never used to go to Bombay for 3 weeks per week. Since he has fallen in love with Zareen, now it is a difficult job to remain here 7 days the whole week. His son is taking care of his business better than he has ever been able. He has never been earning so much as his son is earning. So there is no problem for him. Now he goes for business to Bombay. For what business? Just to avoid poor Zareen. And in anger, Zareen goes to Mahabaleshwar. One has gone this way, the other has gone this way. For what Zareen is going to Mahabaleshwar? Opposite direction. And when they are far away, one is in Bombay, another is in Mahabaleshwar, they start feeling love for each other. Then they both come back to the campus. One or two day, love remains, and then again, Manu is ready for Bombay to do some business. It is better to spend a little less time with each other. 24 hours hanging around each other's neck. Nobody is going to be happy. Neither you nor the person you are hanging with. Religions have been using all these devices to create misery in people. And they have been telling, don't look at anybody's wife or anybody's husband. And it is very natural. When you are tired with your woman, you start looking all around. Some way out. But all religions are preventing that. Adultery is the most sinful act. And I don't see, when you become adult, you are bound to commit adultery. I see it as simply human nature. And once in a while, it is good. It helps you keep your love relationship fresh. If some other woman comes at the weekend, it is not against marriage. It can keep the marriage floating forever. Because those 2 days you realize, again, the old woman was better. So, Manu, the Mickey Mice, moves back to Zareen. And by that time, Zareen is also ready thinking of Manu, because she has been with somebody else, and it does not feel. So they are back 5 days a week. It is good to be married. 2 days at the weekend, it is good to be free. And it is perfectly human. You want to explore new experiences. You want to love as many people as possible. It is one of the characters of Jyapal Sartre which says, I would like to love all the women of the earth. Although it is not possible, but the desire, I would like to love all the women of the earth. Because every woman is a unique individual. Every woman is a different experience. Every woman has her own whims, every man has her own, his own insanities. So when two new people meet, it is a meeting of different kind of cuckoos. It is good, because it gives you an opportunity that the old one was better. You were settled with the old one, this is unnecessary trouble. But in 5 days you will forget it. That is also natural to the mind, to go on forgetting. After 5 days living with the old woman, you will again think that it is getting too much. So, Manu, stop going for business in Bombay, because that creates suspicion into Zarin's mind. Are you having another love affair in Bombay? If you are having another love affair, I will allow you. But not for business. Business is going on perfectly well. Just be honest and tell to Zarin that I need 3 days freedom. Then she is also free for 3 days. And she is such a nice woman that everybody here, there are so many Romeos, and they will love Zarin. Just a little exchange and everybody is happy. Why do you think you are so happy? It is because my continuous corruption of your mind. I cannot see any marriage. I cannot resist the temptation to corrupt. Because I only see, unless you corrupt, people are going to be sad and they will be prey to the priests. Your question is important. What has made man such easy prey for the priests? His misery. So it is a very con game. Religion is a con game. The priest first destroys your happiness in every possible way, forces your mind to be against nature. Nature is a sin. And once you have become miserable, the priest has his shop open. You can come for advice. A doctor's son returned from the medical college. He has become an MD. And the son said to the old father that, "Now I am here. You need not work. You have worked hard your life, whole life. I will take your work. You just rest." After 3 days, he told the father that that old rich woman you have been treating for almost 30 years, I have cured in 3 days. The father just bent his head. He said, "You idiot, that woman has been supporting our family. It is because of that woman you are an MD. It is because of that woman your other brothers are becoming educated. And you cured her. Do you think I was not able to cure her? But to cure her was to destroy your education. That was my half of the income. A doctor cures poor people quickly. Rich people, he takes time. It is natural. There is nothing wrong in it. The rich man can afford. The poor man is unnecessarily wasting his time. Not only time, the poor man may start asking that medicine also should be given to him because he has no money. The rich man is to be kept. If he gets tired of one sickness, give him another sickness. Just the idea put in his mind that I feel you are going to have a heart attack. And just the idea, and his heart will start pulsating, and he will be in the middle of the night, check his heart, whether it is failing or still it is there. Just give an idea. And then he remains your patient. Just tell him that you need a continuous checkup every week. Your body is in a very fragile condition. Doctors are living in a very contradictory life. They are supposed to cure people. But if they cure all the people, then what will happen to them? If a society is completely healthy, nobody is sick, the doctors will start getting sick, starving, dying, they will become beggars. It was only in China, under Lao Tzu's influence, for the first time a new method was introduced. It was Lao Tzu's great compassion that he went to the emperor and told that the whole medical profession is basically wrong because the doctor lives on the disease of the people and he is supposed to cure them. You are putting the man in a contradiction. The emperor asked, "What you suggest?" He said, "I suggest that the doctor should be paid by the emperor for keeping people healthy. When they feel losing their health, they become sick, the doctor's money has to be cut. He is not taking care well." Just the opposite. To keep people healthy, he will be paid. And if somebody falls sick, his pay will be cut. That was bringing the whole medical profession to a totally different perspective. And that's how the enlightened people have been giving new perspectives to people which they don't understand in the beginning. People could not understand that you have to pay for health. Health is yours. What the doctor has to do with it? And the doctor has to lose money if you fall sick. But that was absolutely right. It looked strange. The same is the situation with the priests. If everybody is without guilt, that's what they think about me, that I am a dangerous man. Because my whole effort is to make you free of guilt, free of sin, free of the idea of morality. I want you to learn only one thing, and that is clarity beyond mind. And then out of that clarity let everything happen. Your love, your morality, your behavior. But this will destroy the priests absolutely. This will destroy religions and churches. And this will destroy God. Because who is going to pray to God if you are blissful? Your life is just a dance. Who is going to pray to God? For what? If you can be kept healthy, if you can be kept well nourished, if you can live a long life, 150 years, and still young, which are clear-cut possibilities, because there are people who have passed in Soviet Union 150 years age, and there are few people who have passed the age 180, particularly in the same region from where Stalin came and George Gurdjieff came, both men of steel. In the Caucasus area, people live 180 years and still they are working in their orchards, in their farms. They are young. They have completely forgotten how old they are. Who remembers for 180 years? Just think. When you are 180 years, will you be remember your birth date? So tentatively, it is understood, because oldest people say that we have been seeing them from our very childhood, so they must be older than us. And they are all around. You will be surprised to know that there have been marriages happening at the age of 180. Just the last marriage happened last year. The man was 180, the woman was 170. And they got married, fall in love. This is what I call life. The magistrate who married them asked them that at this age, they said, we are still young. Our very falling in love proves we are young. And we want to be together. And why are you worried? If we have survived 180 years, we may survive 200 years or even more. If 180 years have not been able to kill us, you should remember the arithmetic. It is the 75 that the majority of people die. 85 lesser people die. 95 very few people die. Beyond 100 very rarely someone dies. And beyond 180 there is every possibility you may not die. It's simple arithmetic. Who has ever heard somebody dying after 180. There is no precedence. And scientists say man has the capacity in his body to live at least 300 years if everything remains natural. It is the unnaturalness of life, which is imposed by all religions, that make people's life not only miserable but cut their life from 300 to 75. Even at the age of 60, people start feeling it is better to die. What is the point of living? You cannot fall in love because everybody will object. One old man married a young girl. He was 90 and the girl was only 19. His sons, somebody was 70, somebody was 60, they all told him that this is not time for you to marry. Don't make us all ashamed. Everybody will laugh. He said, it is not your business. I have fallen in love. I am going to marry. And he married, and the doctor who used to look after the old man said to him that you got married, it is very dangerous at your age. It will be better to have a boarder in your house. He meant that keep some young man in the house. So he will take care of your wife, but that was understood. After 9 months, the doctor saw the old man in the market and he said, how things are going? He said, great, my wife is pregnant. The doctor said, and what about the boarder? He said, she is also pregnant. Now, this is life. Live totally and live naturally, and there will be no religion for you, and there will be no priest for you, and there will be no God for you, and there will be nobody who can exploit you and destroy your intelligence, your life, and make you pathological and sick. Now, do you see why I am dangerous? The second question, why is the lie of God so successful? Because you are a failure. It is your failure that makes the lie of God so successful. In your life, you have not loved totally, you have not lived totally, you have never done anything totally. This is your failure. I don't mean by failure what you understand. You understand you are failure if you are not super rich. You are failure if you are not a great politician, a prime minister, a president. You are a failure if you are not world famous. That is not failure. That is simply competitive, egoistic life. And that kind of life is the most miserable because you are continuously fighting, pulling others' legs, rising over people's head, making them as if they are steps for you to climb higher. Your life is violent, and a violent life cannot be beautiful. You are merciless, then only you can become super rich. You don't have any compassion, otherwise how can you exploit millions of people to such a stage that they are starving and you are simply accumulating money which you cannot use. There is no point in accumulating more. Just it has become a habit to you, go on accumulating. Now the richest man in the world is in Japan, $26 billion. What you are going to do with $26 billion? There is nothing that you can do with $26 billion, but he is still running for more. The people you think are successful are continuously running for more. Deep down, they are not successful. I have heard about a man whose 75th birthday was celebrated by his friends. But while they were singing and dancing and drinking and enjoying, suddenly they found that the man is missing. So one of his best friends, a great successful attorney, went out in the garden to look for the man. He was sitting under a tree, very sad. The attorney went, he said, "This is strange. We are all enjoying your birthday. For you we have arranged this whole ceremony, and you are sitting here under a dark tree, in darkness. What is the matter?" He says, "You are the matter." The attorney said, "I am the matter? What I have done to you?" He said, "Remember, 50 years ago, I had come to you that I want to kill my wife. What will be the punishment?" "And you told me that at least 50 years in jail. And now I am feeling today, if I had murdered my wife, I would have been a free man. 50 years have passed, because of you I suffered. I would have at least rested in the jail 50 years, and today I would have been free and there would have been real celebration. It is you who destroyed my whole life. One is successful if he follows his own natural way and lives it as totally and intensely as possible. If you want to be a musician, you will not be a super rich man. If you want to be a flutist, you are not going to be a great politician. But you will be utterly happy. Maybe just enough to eat. But playing on the flute, who cares? You simply disappear in your music. Your flute becomes your meditation. Your song, your dance becomes your meditation. Anything that is totally lived is equal to meditation. You don't need meditation. And a man who is living moment to moment, absolutely naturally, according to himself, has nothing to regret, is not a failure. Hence, a happy man, blissful man, needs no God. It is your misery, your failure being natural, that the lie of God is so successful. God fills your vacuum. But a man who lives totally has no vacuum. I don't have a God, not because I am philosophically atheist, no. I simply don't need a God. I am so fulfilled in myself that I don't need any religion. And I don't need any prayer. And I don't need any meditation. Every moment is so exquisite, so immensely ecstatic. Who cares about all these stupid questions? God, heaven, hell? These are questions of insane humanity. And the insane humanity is bound to be exploited by the priest in the name of God. So first they drive you nuts, then you have to bring coconuts to offer to them. It is a strange game. It is the ugliest game that the priest is playing in the world. His whole success depends on your failure. And your failure depends on being unnatural. If you understand, my approach is so clean and clear. Just be natural. And God will not matter at all, neither heaven and hell, nor any priests. Every moment you are so much in tune with existence that you will blossom like flowers, you will dance like peacocks, you will sing like cuckoos. Your life will have a totally different flavor. It will have the fragrance of a man who is utterly contented with himself and the existence as it is. No desire to change. No desire to make this existence better. No desire to bother about what will happen after death. Socrates' statement is very significant at this point. When he was dying, somebody asked, "Are you afraid that you are going to be poisoned this evening as the sun sets?" He said, "Why should I be afraid? There are only two possibilities. Either I will die, then there is nobody to be there to be worried. Or I should not die, then what is the worry? Only two alternatives, simple. Either I will be completely gone. There is nobody left. Who is going to worry? Who is going to suffer? Or I will not die. If I don't die, why should I worry? I know how to live. I have lived my whole life so joyously. If there is any life after death, I will continue to live. I know the art. If there is no life, I will rest. I know how to rest totally, eternally. There is no problem. Either I will be dancing or I will be resting. But I know both are beautiful. Rest has its own beauty. Eternal rest. no worry, no despair, no anxiety, no anguish. Or I will be dancing, I know the arts. And my dance can go on eternally. A man who is really successful will be having the same approach as Socrates. Who cares about death? Only people who have not lived, they are worried about death. It is a very strange phenomenon. People who have not lived, who have simply hoped to live someday, tomorrow or day after tomorrow, or maybe after death, in paradise. Those who have been postponing life, they are the only people who are afraid of death, because they don't know the art of living. The art of living is simple. Be natural. Don't be bothered by Manu, Moses, Mahavira, Muhammad. Don't be bothered at all by anybody. They lived their life. They never bothered about anybody. Just learn that secret. Buddha lived his life not according to any scripture, not according to any Vedas, not according to any discipline. He lived according to his own insight. That is his greatness. That's what makes him a beautiful flower, a lotus, perfectly open to the sun, to the rain, to the wind, dancing, enjoying. Mahavira lived his own life. All the people who have lived their life totally without any guilt, without any priest interfering, are successful people. I know only of one success, and that is your life should be your life, your natural existence. But if you fail in being your authentic nature, then the lie of God is going to be successful. Then you have to look somebody to take care of you. Then you are worried what will happen after death. Perhaps there is God, how you will face Him if you don't worship Him. It is better to worship. If there is no God, there is no harm. If there is God, you can always say, I was worshipping. These are people who are chickens, who are not to be called human beings. Be authentic, be natural, be honest in every act you are doing. And this is possible only if you enter in your being and find out the center. That is the only success in the world, to find out your center and then let the center guide you. The light will come from the center, radiating from you, and you will be a natural man. The natural man is the Buddha. The unnatural man is pathological sick, then he is bound to be exploited by the priests or by the psychoanalysts, which are the new priests. They don't have anything to offer. Their psychoanalysis is as bogus as the religions. They are the new rabbis, new bishops, new popes. They don't give anything, they simply exploit you. And the priests have not contributed anything to humanity, they have simply exploited. They are the greatest parasites in existence. The third question, it seems the thought of God arises from the feeling that there is something greater than ourselves. Is this greater the no mind or something else? There is nothing greater than yourself, because you are the universe. You are the existence, there is nothing greater than you. This idea is also implanted in you, that the saints are holier than you. And what they are doing, that they have become holier? Because they eat only one time a day, but look at their belly. One time they eat, but how many calories? I don't think any saint has been eating 1600 calories only, that's what I am eating. Only 1600 calories. Even your breakfast is 3000 calories. In 24 hours I am eating only 1600 calories. In 24 hours your calories must be going beyond 5000, 6000. If you are not an American, if you are an American, then 1000 or even more. And they condemn me that I am a hedonist. 1600 calories food and a hedonist. Just each time two small slices of bread and a cup of soup. The same breakfast, the same lunch, the same supper, the same dinner. Those two slices of bread and one cup of soup. No saint of yours have ever lived on 1600 calories. But I am a hedonist. I am a materialist. I am characterless. And only you know my character. People who have never seen me, people who have never been here, who have don't the intelligence or the courage or the guts to enter the gates of this campus, they think I am characterless. Because I am not living according to their scriptures, I am living according to my own consciousness. And my understanding is that all the great people of the world, Socrates, or Buddha, or Lao Tzu, or Chuang Tzu, or Rinzai, or Sekito, lived according to their own light. That's what makes them great and brings a great splendor to their life. Their contemporaries were as much against them as my contemporaries are against me. But I have more enemies than anybody else, because they were very local people. Sekito was not known outside Japan. Buddha was not known outside Bihar, a small state of India. Mahavira was not known outside Bihar. I am a world notorious Buddha for the first time. And I live in my room the whole day, I just come to see you in the evening. But I can understand what is the problem to these people. It is the same old problem. They cannot accept a line. They are sick. They are poor little men, hungry for money, power, prestige. They cannot tolerate a man who lives according to his own insight, according to his own awareness, who does not follow anybody, who has no scriptures and no religion. Such a man becomes a great inferiority complex to millions of people. Otherwise, what harm I am doing to anybody? But because I have been known around the world, I am not a local person, a local Buddha. I have enemies all over the earth. I have friends also all over the earth. Obviously, the friends are going to be very few, very chosen ones, who can understand my insight and who are ready to live on their own, without looking for any God and without looking for any scripture, without looking for any leader, who have guts and courage to go alone, dancing joyously. But there is nothing greater than you. But your religions are teaching that you are sinners, saints are holier, and God is greater. And you are just a small creatures crawling on the earth. Religions have given you an inferiority complex. That inferiority complex is always looking that somebody must be greater. But it is not a natural thing. It is implanted, programmed, conditioned. You have been reduced into subhuman species. Your whole pride, your dignity, your honor has been taken away. You are left without honor, without self-respect, without dignity. Naturally, you think that somebody must be greater. And then you are having all kinds of frauds. You know only their outside, you don't know their inside. On the outside, they are behaving as unnaturally as possible. That gives you the idea, because religions have been teaching you. Unless you go beyond nature, you cannot realize God. So all these saints who seem to be very superior, all that they are doing is self-torture. To me, they are masochists. They need psychiatric help, but religions have been raising them as saints. They are just in the middle between you and God. And God is the highest, of course. He lives above you in the skies. But have you ever thought that the earth is round? When I was in America, God used to live just above my head. But America is just below my feet exactly. If you dig here, you will reach Rajneeshpuram in USA. I am keeping my feet exactly over Ronald Reagan's head. God is above, but the earth is round. So what is above and what is below? People who are living on the other side of the earth, their God is below your feet. And your God is below their feet. So when you raise your hands, just think you are living on a round earth. Don't be stupid. There is nobody higher, nobody lower. It is one existence. That's what triggered the enlightenment of Sikito. Reading the sutra of an ancient master, that one who feels oneness, one life in all things, one who is in tune with existence, is absolutely one with existence. No one is higher than you. No one is lower than you. There is only one existence, one life. We are different expressions of one life. And it is good that there are so many different expressions. It makes existence beautiful. It gives variety. It gives color. It makes it a rainbow. It is not monotonous. It is immensely interesting. Go on exploring and you will always find something new coming up. Outside science is coming up every day upon some new truth. Inside those who have been exploring, they are coming every moment as they go deeper into new bliss, into new ecstasies. Doors upon doors, doors upon doors. And there is no end to this mystery. I love this mysterious universe and I love all that has come out of this mystery. It is unfathomable, hence it is inexpressible. The sutra, Sandokai, second part. Sekito said, cause and effect both necessarily drive from the great reality. Everything drives from the great reality. There is no other reality, there is only one reality, the great reality. Outside, inside are just two sides of this great reality. Every cause, every effect necessarily comes from this great reality. The words high and low are used relatively. Don't take any cognizance of those words. They are very relative. But even your so-called great people suffer from strange ideas. Napoleon Bonaparte, you will think, a great successful man, was suffering always because he was only 5 feet 5 inches high. Even his guards were 7 feet high. One day he was trying to fix on the wall a picture, but he could not reach it. His bodyguard said, "I am higher than you, I can do it." He said, "Shut up, don't use the word higher. Just tell you are taller than me, not higher." He touched some very soft wound that he has been carrying his whole life. The man who created the Russian Revolution, Ilyich Lenin, suffered his whole life with an inferiority complex. The greatest revolutionary in the world, but was always hiding behind a desk because his legs were smaller than his upper body. So they were dangling. They never reached to the earth. And he could not sit on a smaller chair because that will look odd. That's why you are sitting on a small chair. So he used to have a big chair, but in front of him always a desk covering his legs. He was so conscious about his legs, he never allowed anybody to come very close. You have to sit just in front of him on the other side of the desk, so you cannot see his legs. Just feeling unnecessarily inferior. So all your ideas of high and low are relative. Your imaginations, because you continuously compare. Everybody is unique, hence all comparison is wrong. Within the light there is darkness, because there is no difference between darkness and light. The difference is only relative. Darkness can be defined as less light, and light can be defined as less darkness. It is just like the same thermometer can be used for cold water and it can be used for the hot water. The hot water is a little less cold. The cold water is a little less hot. But these are degrees, and all degrees are relative. They are both the same. Light and darkness are one complete whole, two extremes of one reality, because there are animals who see in the light. You know the owl, whose night begins when your day begins. He goes to sleep as the sun rises. Because his eyes are very sensitive, he cannot open them in the light. It hurts to his eyes. His eyes are so sensitive that he can see only in darkness. But in darkness it is all light. To the owl, it is all light in darkness. So it is only a question, what is the capacity of your eyes? With certain instruments your eyes can see in darkness. If your eyes can be brought to the same level of sensitivity as the owl's eyes. You don't hear radio waves passing, but they must be passing, because once you put your radio on, it immediately picks them up. So when you are feeling there are no radio waves around, they are. But your ears are not capable to pick them up. Just once it happened in Switzerland, in the Second World War, a man got a bullet into his ear. The bullet was taken and the ear cured, but something strange followed. The man started hearing the nearest radio station. The whole day there was nothing to put it off. He reported to the nurses. They won't believe that. You must be imagining. It can't be. How can you hear the radio station? He said, call the doctors. And doctors won't believe. He said, then make some experiment. If you don't believe me, I am going crazy. There is no way to shut it off. So they finally decided, because the man is absolutely sane, although what he is saying is absolutely insane, but to his satisfaction, make an experiment. So they brought a radio in the other room and told the man that you go on writing whatever you are hearing. And there was sitting another doctor in that other room writing whatever was going on the nearest radio station. And when they were compared, they were exactly the same. His ear had to be operated so he can become normal. But that opened a possibility that one day you will not have that big radios and transistor sets carrying and listening. You will have small buttons. You just fix in the ear, and on the button there will be all stations. Just push the part you want to hear, and your ear will be able to hear directly. There is no need for a big transistor radio or any other instrument. That also gives the other idea, which has not happened yet, because just as radio waves are passing, the same way television waves are passing. So someday there is absolute possibility you will have just to change your glasses. That's all. And your eyes are sensitive, and on your glasses will be all the television stations. So you fix the television station on the glass, put the glass on, and enjoy it without troubling anybody, silently. We are not aware of many things that are happening around us. We are not aware even of our own being, things that are happening within us. Sekito is right. Within the light there is darkness, but do not be attached to this darkness. Within the darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Light and darkness are a pair, like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. Two legs of the same man, of the same reality. Each thing has its own intrinsic value and is related to everything else in function and position. The relative fits the absolute as a box and its lid. The absolute works together with the relative like two arrows meeting in mid-air. The whole existence is functioning together with you. This is your success if you are coming together with existence and meeting like two arrows in the air. This is your failure if you don't come from your side. Existence is standing there and you are going sideways. You can go anywhere, but you will not be satisfied unless you come to existence, meet, and your heartbeat becomes the heartbeat of the whole universe. That is success, and that is enlightenment. Reading the above lines, you should have grasped the great reality. Do not judge by any standards. If you do not see the way, you do not see it, though you are actually walking on it. You may not be aware that you are a Buddha, but you are carrying the Buddha all the time. You may not know that you are reaching to the ultimate, but you are walking on the way without knowing. The whole difference is between knowing and not knowing. Not knowing you are miserable, knowing you are dancing with joy and celebration. When you walk the way, it is not near. It is not far. If you are deluded, you are mountains and rivers away from it. Only in your delusion, in your mind fictions, hallucinations, it is far away, mountains and rivers away. But if you are not deluded, if you are simply silent without thoughts, you are in it. There is no distance between you and the truth. There is no distance between you and existence. This very moment, just a little awareness, and suddenly you find yourself merging with this vast splendor, this great miracle of existence. I say respectfully to you, says Sekito, to those who wish to be enlightened, do not waste your time in vain. That is his last statement, that if you want to become enlightened, don't waste your time, don't postpone for tomorrow. Now and here, put your total energy and you will be enlightened. Enlightenment is your nature, so you are not to find it somewhere else. You don't have to go on any pilgrimage. You don't have to go to any holy place. You don't have to believe in any theology, in any religion. You have just to dig deeper into yourself in the present moment, and suddenly the whole life springs up and you are. For a great surprise that the Buddha was hidden within you. Not in any temple. That you have always been on the right path. That you have always been carrying Buddha in your womb as your nature. just you never looked at it. All I teach to you is looking inwards to find your center. That is the center of the whole existence. Bosson wrote, "I grow old, sweet bird, you vanish into autumn twilight." He is saying, "I grow old, and just as a sweet bird vanishes into autumn twilight, far away, you see it to a certain point and then it goes into the bluish sky." He is saying, "I am also growing old, sweet bird. My autumn twilight is going to come soon. I will also disappear into the blueness of existence." These are the words of someone who knows death is a door to the divine. Death is a door to the deepest mystery of existence. Just you have to disappear. You are the only problem, you are the only barrier. Just drop that problem, drop that barrier, and all is just ecstasy and pure bliss. Manisha's question. Friedrich Nietzsche Shah, man's energy in terms of a lake that up to now has flowed out into God. He looked forward to that day when the lake would cease to leak outwards, when a dam would be created, so man's energies could rise higher and higher. It seems he was on the right track in assessing the need for one to go in. But the damming up of energies sounds dangerously like the idea of the ascetics. Would you please comment? Friedrich Nietzsche is only a thinker, a philosopher of tremendous genius. But whatever he is saying is only a logical, rational, philosophical statement. It is not existential. So try to understand that a man who has not gone beyond the mind still can have certain statements which come very close to the truth. But even to be close is to be at distance. What he is saying, that up to now human energies have been just like a lake that has been flowing out into God, outwards. He looked forward to that day when the lake would cease to leak outwards, when a dam would be created and so man's energies could rise higher and higher. He is coming very close to the point of meditation. Your energies are going outward to the objects, to the money, to the power, and finally, if you become religious, to paradise, to God, but they are all out. So you are leaking out your energies, and ultimate result is a feeling of utter emptiness, hollowness, unworthiness, a failure. He is only thinking that the day must come when people will start creating a dam to prevent the leakage. So the whole energy gathers inwards, and rather than spreading outwards in thin layers, it starts rising upwards like a pillar. He is perfectly right, but it is not his experience. He is just imagining someday. I am providing you that day which he was imagining. What is your meditation? Just taking all your energies from outside to the interiormost space. And as energies go on gathering, not only they go higher, they also go deeper. Simultaneously, just like roots of a big tree, roots go on going deeper and deeper, and the tree goes on higher and higher. Exactly your consciousness, your life energy moves higher and lower simultaneously. It touches the very depth of the earth, that is materialism, and it touches the stars, that is your spirituality. Just as a tree cannot be without roots, any spirituality without roots in the earth is bound to fail. The East knows it perfectly, how its spirituality has failed. And still they go on insisting that materialism is against spirituality. And because of this idea, the whole East has suffered poverty, starvation. No science developed, no technology developed, which can help people. And the West has suffered because they think only roots are enough. There is no need for the tree, and the flowers, and the fruits. What you will do with the roots? So West has roots very deep into the earth, in technology, in science, in objective research, but is feeling very utterly empty inside. The East has all the branches and huge trees rising towards the stars, but they go on falling, because without roots you cannot keep the tree standing. Both need a great meeting point. East and West, materialism and spiritualism, the inner and the outer, the higher and the deeper, both have to come to a certain synchronicity, then man will be whole. And Manisha, your worry is unnecessary. You say it seems he was on the right track in assessing the need for one to go in, but the damming up of energy sounds dangerously like the idea of the ascetics. He was not aware at all about meditation. So he used the word damming, but his word dam should be taken symbolically from a philosopher who is still within the mind, but the mind of Nisse must have been one of the greatest minds that has ever lived on the earth. because he can conceive something beyond the mind, living in the mind. Living in a dark cell with no opening, he can still visualize in his dreams the sunrise. He has not seen it. He can visualize in his dreams beautiful flowers. He has never seen them. His capacity to visualize is great and should be appreciated. No, he is not an ascetic. He was absolutely against ascetics. So he cannot mean what you are worrying about. It sounds like holding all your energies inwards, seems to be creating a prison for the energies that so that they cannot flow outward. It is because he had no experience for right symbols to use. When you have energies rising like a pillar and going deeper into the ultimate depth, you will have both the worlds together, the inner world and the outer world. Because the inner and the outer are two aspects of the same energy. Of course, you will not be flowing towards God, which is a fiction. You will be flowing towards a real ocean of consciousness that we are making an effort to create, the ocean of consciousness, and you disappear into it. It is not ascetic. Certainly he was not an ascetic. So he cannot mean it. But a man without eyes is talking about the light and he comes so close to it, is worth praising. He has no eyes to see, so he has no idea what light is. But just thinking about, he comes very close. Also, he cannot make exactly the right statement, but it is only approximately right. But no other philosopher has come even that close. His beauty is great. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Late one afternoon, at the pearly gates of heaven, Saint Peter is inspecting 20 married women who have just arrived for judgment. "Now, girls," says Saint Peter, "if any of you was ever unfaithful to your husband on earth, please take one step forward. And remember, no lying and no cheating. I have ways of checking up on you." Immediately 19 of the wives move forward, but one woman remains standing alone. Saint Peter nods quietly to himself and walks over to the telephone. He dials up hell. "Hello, Satan," exclaims Saint Peter. "I am sending down 20 unfaithful wives to you. But be careful, one of them is completely deaf." one morning, the phone rings in the office of Dr. Selby Nimless. "Good morning," says Dr. Nimless cheerfully. "It may be a good morning for you." He snaps Brenda Chubbs at the other end. "But ever since you have been treating my husband Buster, I have not had a single good morning." "I am sorry to hear that, Mrs. Chubbs," says the doctor. "What seems to be the problem?" "Well," grumbles Brenda, "before he came to you, he was a perfect husband and father. But now he has become a rat. He uses to tell me how pretty I am. Now he calls me an ugly old bitch. He used to love our family life, but now he is critical about my housekeeping, hates the kids, and chases after any loose woman who happens to walk by. I think you have been giving him hormones and injections which have completely altered his personality." Says Dr. Nameless, "I want you to know, Mrs. Chubbs, that I have not been giving your husband injections of any kind. All I did was fit him with a pair of contact lenses." It is Sunday afternoon at the Holy Orthodox Church of the Blessed Bleeding Virgin on the Greek island of Crete. Bishop Cretin is preaching a sermon to the remaining four old ladies in his flock. And I am telling you, thunders Cretin, that the morals of today are being horribly corrupted. Just yesterday, I went to see a movie called Bambi Goes Berserk, which is filled with disgusting scenes of murder, rape, fornication, cannibalism, homosexuality, and other perversions of the worst kind. If anything shows the need for censorship, then this movie is it. Now, ladies, are there any questions? Yes. Cry all old hags in unison. Where is it playing? Nivedanam. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to go inwards. Gather all your energies. Gather your total consciousness and rush towards your center of being with an urgency as if this is the last moment of your life. Only with such urgency people have become enlightened. Faster and faster, deeper and deeper. As you are coming closer to your center, a great silence descends over you. It is almost falling like soft rain, cool, very tangible and very mysterious. Gautam the Buddha auditorium has become absolutely silent, as if there is no one at all. A little more, deeper, closer to your being, and suddenly you are surprised. Great fountains of peace burst all around you. A little more closer, and there arises for the first time a divine drunkenness, a deep ecstasy, a blissfulness you have never known before. One step more and you are at the very center. Suddenly you see you are no more. At the center is your hidden nature, your original face. We have used Gautam Buddha's face as a symbol for everybody's original face. So let me call, you have disappeared, only Buddha is. In another words, you are no more, only existence is. And this is the greatest experience, the highest peak of consciousness and the greatest death simultaneously. The only thing you have to remember at this point, Buddha consists of only one element, consciousness, awareness, witnessing. Different names of witnessing. Just witness the way a mirror mirrors. No judgment, no appreciation, no identification. Witness, you are not the body. Witness, you are not the mind. And witness, you are only a witness. Nivedana, relax, but go on keeping the witness as clear as possible. Buddha used to call this witness sammasati. Right remembering. You have remembered you are a Buddha. You are not the body, you are not the mind. You are only a pure consciousness. And as your witnessing deepens, you start melting like ice in the ocean. Gautam the Buddha auditorium is turning into an ocean and you are disappearing into it just like ice melting. No waves, no ripples, such silence. You are at the very center of existence. You can now feel your heartbeat to be in tune with the universal heartbeat. Absolutely unknown, unacquainted flowers are sovereign over you. The whole existence is rejoicing with your entry into the beyond. Going beyond the mind is going into the very cosmos. Mind is your prison, to go beyond it is your freedom. Collect as many experiences as you can. All the flowers, all the fragrances, the silence, the serenity, the tranquility, the calmness, the peace that passeth understanding, and the divine ecstasy, the great splendor that you are a Buddha, that you are one with the cosmos. At this moment you are the most fortunate people in the whole world. The whole world is concerned with trivia. I am calling you the most blessed ones because you are concerned with the ultimate, with the essential, with the eternal. God is dead, and the only living truth is Zen. Zen simply means what you are experiencing at this moment, a pure, mirror-like innocence. One thing you have to remember, don't forget to persuade the Buddha to come along with you. He has to come. It is your nature. And he has been hiding at the center for centuries, perhaps for millennia. And he has been waiting for you to invite him. Invite, welcome, request. Unless the Buddha comes into your day-to-day life, in your actions, in your gestures, in your words, in your silences, his grace, his presence has to be felt. Unless you are completely possessed by the Buddha, and all these experiences of silence and beatitude and blissfulness and divine ecstasy start overflowing you in all your actions, in your very presence. An energy field is created around you. You for the first time become a mystery unto yourself, a shrine, a holy land, the place where Buddha grows, comes to its full flowering. This very body is the Buddha, and this very earth is the lotus paradise. Nivedana, come back, but come back as a Buddha, with the same peace, with the same serenity, with the same silence. Sit down for a few seconds just to remember the golden path that you have traveled, the experiences that you have encountered. Some fragrance must have come with you. Some silence must be hanging around you. Some peace will be overflowing you. Some drunkenness you will be still feeling. And remember that just behind you there is a new presence standing, the presence of the Buddha, the awakened one. There have been thousands of Buddhas. The Buddha is no one's monopoly. It is everybody's birthright. These are the three steps of becoming a Buddha. The first step, Buddha comes because you have invited him, following you like a shadow just behind you. Second step, as you become more and more attuned with the Buddha, he comes in front of you. You become the shadow behind the Buddha. And yes, you become a shadow, you are starting disappearing. Shadow has no existence. The third step, you have disappeared completely. You don't exist even as a shadow. You are absorbed into the Buddha. You have merged into that ultimate consciousness. You have become one with the universe. This is the only existential truth. I don't teach any philosophy. I teach you the existence, the truth, the beauty, and the grandeur. It all happens at the third step without any effort. The metamorphosis from a man into a new man, the new man is the Superman of Friedrich Nietzsche, and it is the awakened one, the Buddha of the Eastern mystics. My effort is to bring East and West into a meeting. Not only a meeting, but into a merger. A deep synchronicity between materialism and spirituality. Between Zorba and the Buddha. When you are both the Zorba, as far as the outside world is concerned, and a Buddha, as far as the inner world is concerned, you are a whole man. And the whole man is the only holy man. There is no other possibility.